there. How you doing? Welcome. This is Winning at Life with Gregory Ricks, your wallet's favorite show. I am your co-host, James Parker. If you have a financial situation, not quite sure what to do, you better call Gregory, 504-260-0995. You can also send us a text message via the Winning at Life app. Or also on the Winning at Life app, there's a little one-touch let you call the show there from the front screen. In case you don't remember the phone number, 504-260-0995. A lot going on in the financial world today, including something that doesn't happen very often. And really, it doesn't happen. When the rare time it does it happen to a company as high profile as Tesla? Yeah, they were all over the news today. So it started out, Tesla had their shares halted. Well, what's going on? What's good? Because I'm down in the dungeon doing some production work. Actually, I was literally making some new commercials for the Total Wealth Authority. You know, just remixing some spots down in there. And I saw the caption, so then I had to back it up on the DVR to Fox Business, Trish Reagan. What is that caption? Explain that.
All right, Tesla, everyone, we got to get to that right now because it has been halted. It has been halted for some pending news. Now, don't forget, we saw earlier that Elon Musk said he was going to take the company private at $420 a share.
All right, so that's what I was faced with. So I started doing a little digging. We found out it was announced a little bit before the halt there, actually a few hours before the halt, that a Saudi Arabian prince, one of the sovereign wealth fund, they're throwing what is believed to be $1.8, maybe $3.1 trillion in an investment of the company of Tesla. So it looks like they're buying, we don't know the specifics, but they're saying it's being reported between a 3-5% stake of the company. But is that it? Because you heard Trish also say, yeah, you know what? I'm thinking about taking this company private. Yeah, I've already got a deal worked out. So then I go do a little bit more digging and then wait a second. I go check the Tesla Twitter feed, and this is where they had made an announcement. They had announced it this morning that Elon Musk is thinking about taking the whole joint private at $420 a share, which is quite a bit of a premium over what it is now. It's about a 20% jump in what the stock is worth now. So then I continue the coverage there. Here's Charlie Gasparino giving his 2 cents while the stock is halted, right after the stock is halted. This is one of the guys they bring in on talking to Trish Reagan on Fox Business, Charlie Gasparino.
We do know that over the last 3 or 4 months, Elon Musk has been in a massive knockdown, dragout fight with shorts. And certain reporters, he believes, are in kind of in bed with the shorts and promoting their line about Tesla, namely, you know, negative stories about how brakes don't work and how, you know, certain models are being delayed and just all that. You can just look this up.
Yeah, so go look it up. So we go look it up. And it turns out, yeah, that short thing really did get under Elon Musk's crawl. So let's go look at this memo that he sent his employees this morning. And this is kind of cool because this tells you kind of a broader context of what's going on in the tech world, especially that bleeding cutting edge of the tech world with Tesla and SpaceX and all this new technology. And, you know, we're all wrapped up in this company because so much of our tax money is subsidizing it. But there's a lot of other things you can learn here too. Just the process. When's the last time you saw a stock get halted? Do you ever remember that happening? Do you know why? Does it get reinstated the next day? Does it get reinstated that day? Is it knocked off? What's going on here? Is somebody in trouble? Well, here, we'll learn together. We'll finish this story together. So while I'm piecing the puzzle together early this afternoon, I go and I start digging through the memo that he sent out. And this is a quote. This is Elon Musk wrote this memo, or is supposed to have written this memo, to his employees. This is an internal Tesla memo. He says, first, the financial decision has not been made, but the reason for doing this is all about creating the environment for Tesla to operate best. As a public company, we're subject to wild swings in our stock price that can be a major distraction for everyone working at Tesla, all of whom are shareholders. Being public also subjects us to the quarterly earnings cycle that puts enormous pressure on Tesla to make decisions that may be right for a given quarter, but not necessarily right for the long term. Finally, as the most shorted stock in the history of the stock market, I had heard that before. But Elon Musk is putting this as one of the pillars in why he's thinking about going public. As the most shorted stock in the history of the stock market, being public means that there are large numbers of people who have the incentive to attack the company. What's curiously missing from his reasoning here is, you know, if I can take the company private and I can find some sort of sovereign wealth fund, I don't know, maybe a Saudi prince, then I don't have to worry about my cash burn rate. I don't have to worry about running out of liquidity. I don't have to worry about going back to the market and trying selling bonds to get capital or getting some other venture capital who wants to take up a giant stake in my company for a few bucks just to keep it going. He's going to tell me what to do. No, it looks like the confluence of the two stories here, the Saudi Arabian Sovereign Wealth Fund throwing $2, maybe $3 billion at Tesla and them saying, you know what, we now have the money to go private. Not only are we going to buy the shares that you want to get rid of, we'll do it at a premium, $420 a share. So this is where we're at. The stock's halted. Tesla, something came up. I still don't know how and why all the triggers are pulled and how they decided on when to stop it and when to start it. But we did get note that it was about to start back up. And it was pretty cool because Fox Business basically started a countdown. They were on the watch like this was a space shuttle launch. Here's Liz Claman in the next hour after Trish Regan was reported as halted. It looks like it's about to start back up.
We just got this breaking news. They put a time on the clock for when shares of Tesla will resume trading, 3:45 p.m. Eastern time. It is 3:39 p.m. right now, so we've got about 6 minutes to go.
And they had the little counter and the constant reminder going on in the caption. It was pretty cool. They had some exciting things going on at Fox Business because that's usually just such a humdrum bunch of pencil neck geeks talking about some sort of financial jargon. You got to pay attention to keep up with it. But it was hot and happening, and there was a lot at stake. And, you know, the future of one of the most beloved companies and simultaneously one of the most hated companies. Remember when we, I don't know if you were listening when we talked about this last year, but one of these online brokers release some data on who buys what. And the baby boomers had their own top 10 of stocks, and the Gen Xers had their own little top 10 set of stocks that really wasn't that different from the boomers. But for some reason, in the millennial top 10 stock purchases of the year, Tesla was up there. Tesla was like number 6. Now, Gen X and baby boomers didn't even have it in the top 10. But millennials love this stock. And why do they love this stock? Well, because, you know, same reason people love a lot of companies, because it makes a ton of money. Oh, no, it doesn't make a ton of money. Well, because it has a really popular product that people are rushing to buy. No, actually, it's just for a select few people. Well, because it's at least efficient and productive, and no, it's not even fulfilling hardly any of its orders on time. In fact, it never makes its earnings, and it never makes its production goals. It's got backlogs. So why do they like it again? Cause it's cool. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what the answer to that is. They think it's the future. So then Liz Claman is keeping an eye on things for us. And when trading started back up, they were on it.
It is now.
This is Fox Business, by the way.
3:45 p.m. Eastern, when the company had said the trading would begin. It has begun, folks. It is up $28 and climbing. It is at $370.73. It had been halted at $367.25.
Yeah, and then there was some question about what's going on here, because you saw the Tesla stock shoot up for about 20 minutes or so before Elon Musk made the tweet saying, yeah, you know, it looks like we're going private and I got the funding secured. So then there was some grumbling. Did someone find out before everyone else and people were rushing out? Was there some insider trading? Was there some insider information that got out? So then it was kind of some sour grapes out there. But I, you know, have I heard that before and just forgot that this is the most shorted stock in the history of the stock market? Because when it popped up around noon our time, and then there was the tweet at 12:48 Eastern time. So, yeah, about noon our time. And then there was a halt a few minutes after that. The short guys were already getting pummeled. And then when it came off of the halt and started again and went straight up, the short guys got destroyed today. Elon Musk short opponents did not enjoy their Tuesday. One more clip from Charlie Gasparino, who really sums it up. This whole situation was just bizarre.
I mean, this is like one of the more bizarre trading days I've seen in a long time.
Historic, even.
Historic.
Yeah, you don't see that every day. So here's what we learned here. If the SEC sees something fishy going on, because we'll probably get a full report and I'll be able to explain or report on to you what happened with a little more facts rather than just the speculation with the scarce facts we have today. But it looks like they didn't like something they saw, and it very well may have been that spike up in price before the public announcement by Elon Musk. And if that's the case, you know, somebody may be in trouble there. But it's also pretty interesting to keep up with who exactly owns Tesla stock. You know, I mentioned to you out of the individual investors, when you break it down by age, it's really popular with millennials. But I saw another report today on how Tesla stock, close to, what was it, almost a third of it, is owned by public funds. So pension funds and ETFs and mutual funds, which means there's millions and millions, tens of millions of Americans who are actually affected by this stock's movement, at least indirectly. So the SEC got a little concerned there. They halted trading, and it's really cool when they halt trading because when you look at the chart, especially as it's being drawn out on the day, it's never a straight line. It could be going up or down, but there's some jig-jags and there's some dead cat bounces in the middle. But when it halted trading, it was a straight line, and it was parallel to the x-axis, and for some reason, it looked so out of place. It looked like the graphic artist made an error when they were drawing the chart, but that's what it was today. This was a super hyper rare occurrence. If you want to go see what that chart looks like, we have it available for you. You can go to winningatlife.com or the Winning at Life app because Tesla is on the short sheet. So what you do, if you haven't been there yet, this is a good time to get your feet wet and go check out the short sheet. You know, you've been saying that's pretty cool how they put up the charts and graphs that they're looking at, and you can watch it on your phone. Well, this is a good time to get involved here. Go to the short sheet, click the ticker symbol for Tesla. There's the little corporate logo there next to it. It says TSLA. Click that and you get to see the bizarre Tesla chart of the day. All right, if you have a financial situation, not quite sure what to do, 504-260-0995. I'm James Parker. We are Winning at Life with Gregory Ricks. Welcome. It's Winning at Life with Gregory Ricks. It's your wallet's favorite show. I'm your co-host, James Parker. It's my favorite show, too. Me and my wallet have a few things in common. This is just one of them. If you have a financial situation, not quite sure what to do, call Gregory, 504-260-0995. The Hall of Fame financial advisor is across the table right now and ready to take your call. In fact, he just rebooted his laptop, so now he's doubly ready to go. Coming up on tomorrow's show, we're pretty excited about to do this again. It's been a while. We're going to do 20 things the rich do every day. And the question is, so what do the rich people do every day that the poor people don't do? And yes, there is such thing as being born into a position of privilege, and there's such thing as being born in a situation that's harder than what the average person has to go through. But when you get to the full meaning of life, then the means of life, it turns out that a lot of this is in your control. And if you, what do the rich do every day that the poor don't do? A lot of this is just your own decisions. And it just builds up these tiny little decisions that you make every day over the course of days, weeks, months, and years. Really adds up and defines in a large part whether or not you are going to be a rich person or a poor person. You know, and if you are a poor person, if you do these rich things, chances are you're not going to stay poor very long. I'm going to do one of them, though. This is a good one. 44% of wealthy wake up 3 hours before work starts versus 3% for the poor. All right, let that one sink in. Before work starts. Now you start, because what you do is you start coming up with excuses, right? Please do.
Most people wake up about 30 minutes or less before they have to be at work. I think that's what that number is.
Okay.
It's even with kids and everything. I'm just telling you, that's what my feeling is of dealing with employees and such for past couple of decades. And that's what I hear other people talk about. And gosh, you've wasted hours in doing so. When do you have time to read? You should be reading a chapter of a book. You should probably be reading 15, 20 minutes every morning, maybe 30 every morning. Because when are you going to read in the evening? You got dinner, kids' homework, and then probably passing out from exhaustion. Oh, well, maybe you're not tired. You can read in the evening because you didn't get up early.
That's not what the rich people do, though. The rich people have this gap before their workday starts, between when they wake up and their workday starts. And you know what a lot of them do? A lot of them actually exercise. They work out on a regular basis. Man. You know what? This is going to be a good splash of cold water tomorrow when we redo this segment to remind me of all the things I'm not doing. Because when we go through this list, we're doing a lot of these, and we're doing them pretty good. But not all of them, and I could always be better. So that's going to be a fun list tomorrow. Because
is it easy to get up?
If it's a routine, it becomes easier. But no, it's not. It's not the easy way to go.
You know, it's just like, I just typically just wake up. I don't need an alarm. And it's surprising sometimes when my body clock misses that time. And, I guess I was tired and needed a little bit more sleep. But otherwise, you know, I've just got this time that I wake up, and first thing I do is hit the TV button to see what's going on pre-markets. And we're I'm probably 2.5 hours ahead of market open at that point there. So, you know, I've already started the day, and that's just kind of my first instant thing is, okay, what are futures looking like at the start of the day? Is there any big news? Has Elon Musk come out with another model car he wants to build?
Well, that's, I didn't know when we started doing the show.
That was a kind of joke. I
got it in there. But when I first started the show, it didn't dawn on me in the position you are as a financial planner that there is the whole world is ahead of us by a few hours. You know, China is basically in the middle of their, Thursday by now. But by the time we wake up, the market day is almost done, even in England.
Yeah, Europe's through half their day.
Right.
At that point.
And if we're supposed to be a trading partner with them and they're doing business, we're waking up late. The rest of the world has a big head start.
And then think about this. You're living on the West Coast.
You're almost a day behind.
You're way behind. If you're, say, waking up at 7 a.m. or 6:30 or 6, you're behind. No matter when you wake up, you're behind. And I'll tell you, I'm pretty sure there's business people that are probably getting up at 4 a.m. to start their day just to be in cycle with what most of the world, be on the same cycle as most of the world, or the East Coast as well. Think about that. To me, that's a reason not to live there. I'm missing half the business day.
It makes it tougher, doesn't it?
Yeah, because you're trying to, by the time you get things up and going, they're starting to close on the other coast. And of course, Europe's done shut down. You know, it's when you start thinking in timelines like that.
Oh man, the one tech support outfit that's in UK, I have to call these people at 6:30 in the morning just to catch them at the end of their work day because they shut down at about 4 o'clock.
Yeah, one of the firms we use. Yeah, over in England. Yeah.
I literally have to wake up and call them between 6 and 6:30. It kind of is the hot spot for when I can actually get them on the phone. And I'm catching them coming back from lunch. It's the weirdest thing.
Yeah, they're on their afternoon tea. And I can relate to that. You know, a few times I've been to Europe, but and staying connected with the office is, you know, like I'm done through my half my day when I'm over there and they're just getting in. So it's kind of like got to be on things.
I will admit this though. That is a human behavior that you can change. I used to be a guy that if I didn't have an alarm clock, I would sleep until 11 a.m. Like I needed one. But then after about a decade of doing morning shows and being forced to wake up at 3 a.m. or sometimes 4 a.m. if I'm lucky, that'll beat it out of you pretty quick. And my body clock has I don't even think it's readjusted. I just think it's been destroyed. And it could be whatever I want it to be now.
Yeah, my wife thinks that I'm kind of weird that way. She says, "Wait, you don't need much sleep. At some time, I'm just going to sleep in the evening. It'll just, if I sit still, boom, I'm out. But as far as the morning time, it doesn't matter how late I stayed up. It's just, boom, it's time to roll." And yeah, I have to get started early because the reading was the markets, get my workout in. And yeah, I'm working out again. My injuries healed. So like, boom, it's tough, dude. It's tough getting back in there.
How do you handle your schedule? Because people listening to the show don't know how tight this thing gets at times. I can't get 30 minutes with you today or tomorrow. And I'm your radio partner.
And then Monday, which is my meetings with staff, different departments, meeting with you. Yeah, on Monday, you got 30 minutes. Maybe not quite that. I know it was compressed, but we sat down, had a closed door meeting, and went over a number of things that you wanted to cover with me. And I thought it was a good meeting. And it's fast tracking there. You know, we don't necessarily need to spend an hour. You know, a lot of stuff can get compressed. You know, we didn't have any BS or anything. We got right down to it because, you know, I was really slammed that day with different departments and personnel that were needing to meet with me. And then I had some, of course, surprises that took an hour and a half out of my schedule that day as well. And that's kind of normal. Things are going to change and all of a sudden you've got to work on something else. And that's usually where Mondays go. Friday's a lot easier a day for me, but it doesn't mean I'm not doing anything, but I am working on things at my pace other than the Monday through Thursday where the schedule forces it. Like today, meetings with clients and such, and then have an investment meeting deciding what the trades are. We had that today, of course, as well. We typically don't do that on Friday because we don't like to buy on Friday. I'll sell, but that's briefer on that day. But Monday through Thursday, we have to have that meeting as well during the day.
You're the first guy that I've had to carry around my to-do list for. I have a to-do list that I make basically every Monday, but it can get updated. Where, because I'm very scatterbrained and disorganized, so I need that constant reminder to stay on task. And if I'm ever in the spot where like, oh, I got nothing to do, I go to the list. I have to bring it to my meetings with you just so I can run through everything as fast as possible and not miss anything. That's the tough one. Because if I miss something, then I don't get to talk to you for a while.
You know, like Gwen that works for me, and she does that. She has a spreadsheet and it's on that Google Drive.
Mm-hmm.
That she copies me on and my wife as well, because she likes to interact in that category that Gwen works in. And that's one, it's one of those list things of status, because we have so many items going on that we kind of need to always see where we're at. And it keeps me in a happier mood knowing where I'm at instead of wondering, what the heck happened? Where has this been? Why was the ball dropped? I don't have to ask that because, boom, we're on that.
All right, so this is a great preview of what we're doing tomorrow, 20 Things the Rich Do Every Day. Last time we tried to do this, we tried to do it in two segments, and we had to speed through the back half of it. You want to do three segments on it tomorrow or just until it's done?
It's the hour show. We're doing it until it's done, and we're going to convert it to a podcast to learn from.
All right, we're ready to take your calls. If you have a financial situation, not quite sure what to do, call Gregory, 504-260-0995. I'm James Parker. We're Winning at Life with Gregory Ricks.
Welcome back. Winning at Life. Hey, had a call. Individual from Poplarville, Mississippi, did a first interview over the phone. Hey, by the way, this is Winning at Life, the Daily Wrap. I'm your host, Gregory Ricks, along with James Parker. But at a first meeting, we did an on-the-phone meeting. Wasn't a go-to meeting. We didn't do video or anything. We just called and had a conversation. He wanted to know where he's at on the path. Man, I just so enjoyed talking to him today. He's been a long-time listener, and he wanted to know where he is on the path. And dude, his problem is his RMDs are going to be bouncing up. He's got a pension. He's wanting to retire, say, at 61. So he's got a pension turning on. He's going to lean on assets to get his income where he needs to be. And that's around, say, gross of 55K. Then he's going to turn on Social Security at FRA. That's full retirement age. And his wife's turning on the spousal benefit because she doesn't have much of a work record. So when they turn that on combined with his pension, he's going to be like at $76,000 a year instead of 55. So he's getting a raise. So he stops drawing on the
assets?
401k. Cool. Yeah, the assets, because we're leaning on that because of RMDs. But still, when he reaches 70 and a half, RMDs are going to start jumping out at $36,000 a year. And that will be, he would have taken a 4-year gap where he didn't take anything from those assets because he turned on Social Security at FRA. So now he's got even more income. The thing is, he is on the path, sitting really good and looking to retire in about 2.5 years. So it's great conversation. So we're going to connect back up in about 20 months and talk about some working together on some things. So it's not something that we're going to do right now. And then at the end of the call, he thanked me and, you know, his longtime listener. And he says, you know, you need to open an office up here. He said, everybody listens to you. He repeated, everyone listens to your show. I said, I appreciate that. But we are doing our best to try to get an office by the end of this month. It's just, we're behind on that because we're busy. But I said, we're going to get that office open. And then once we get that established and going, we'll look at adding some others on in the region. And he said, that'd really be good because that's closer to him than the New Orleans office. But it was just, it's one of those conversations that makes you feel good. The guy's doing it in a great place. He's conservative, not wanting a lot of risk. It was just fun. I just wanted to share that with everybody. And we've got somebody on hold here. So if you'd like to join the conversation, the phone number is 504-260-0995.
James, New Orleans, you're on Winning at Life with Gregory Ricks. How can we help you, sir?
Yes, sir. I got a quick question for you guys. I'd like to get some information on what else I can be investing in after, you know, I pay my taxes, you know, at the end of the week. And I'll tell you a little bit about myself and where I'm at financially, and then I'll hang up and, you know, listen to you guys' comments. I'm 29. I've got a little under 125 grand in my 401k at work. They match, I guess you could call it 100% of your salary up to 8%. I won't say what I make a year, but it's a, you know, it's a pretty decent salary. I max out my 401k and I also max out a Roth IRA. So I've got about $400 a week extra that I can, you know, either put into a savings account, which is what I have been doing, or, you know, keep reinvesting my money. So I don't really know a lot of other options. I don't have a financial advisor per se. I do the Roth and, you know, my 401k through Fidelity at work. And, you know, I just wanted to know your thoughts on what else I could be investing in outside of my 401k.
Do not hang up. Do not hang up, James. I know you threw that out there to hang up, but we kind of sometimes, because we're talking about money, not your political opinion. We're talking about money, so we might need some interaction on that. So when you're maxing your 401k at age 29, so that means you're maxing out at about 18,000 because you're not 50 or older, so you don't get that $6,000 catch up. Right. So I just want to clarify that for the listeners. That's a pretty good match, 100% up to 8%. That's serious right there. Good job on that. So you're max and you're putting money into a Roth each year. So it means you're putting up to $5,500 into a Roth each year. So that's awesome. So how much more a month, or you could define it in a year, are you able to save that you're looking to put somewhere?
Right now, on a weekly basis, I put away another $400 a week into a savings account. And I just I personally think it's just wasting there because, you know, savings accounts are not really getting me any returns. It's more of just a kind of a safe haven right now that I didn't really know what to do with it. Like I said, I don't have a financial advisor, and it's just been, you know, just adding up. So it's getting to a point now where it's like, well, do I want to keep just shoving this money into a bank account and not making any returns, or do I want to go back and put it into something in the market where I can get, you know, a decent return on it every year? So I guess to answer your question.
So you've got another $19,000 a year that you could save.
If 400 times 52, I'm not quick on my two.
I just did it on a monthly basis. It's quicker
okay,
that
yes,
way.
Sir. So yeah, I guess give or take a little bit.
Maybe a little, you might have a little bit more based on the weekly method, but I just turned it into $1,600 a month.
Okay.
From a standpoint, when you said 400 a week, I just did.
Yes, sir.
It on a month, converted it to a monthly basis to get the math done real quick. I'm simple in those ways. Okay. But what I was wanting to get to and finding out about that, this is something we talked about, and it's section 7702. And one of my advisors on my staff, he's age 32 and put together something where he was thinking about, well, what if I save $500 a month in 7702. Okay. And what we're talking about is building up wealth to take tax free. And that's what section 77 allows you to do strategically. So he put together at age 32, and yet you're 29. So you're going to improve upon it, but he ran the numbers where he's putting away $6,000 a year and you have more to put away. And yeah, my guy has more than that as well, but he was just wanting to start out conservative. So something he figured he could keep doing no matter what happens going forward on income, which I think is a good, once again, being conservative. You know, are you single or married?
Single.
James? Single? Yes, okay. Well, see, that number might change with a wife and a couple of kids, a house, boat, four-wheeler, you know, as life changed for, I'm just throwing out there examples. So going with 500 a month, 6,000 a year, and he was going to save it, put it into this section 7702 for 30 years. And that would be an accumulation of $180,000. And then he would turn on distributions of $36,000 a year for the next 30 years, assuming he would live to 91. He would have taken out $1,081,400.
From a $180,000 investment?
Yes.
Donation.
And yeah, he's going to donate $180,000 to it. That's what James puts it, but that's contributions. And then he takes out $1,000,000, and that $1,000,000 is not going to be taxed. How about that? That's your Roth on steroids,
right?
Yeah.
Think about that. I've never heard of
this. So you're building two different streams of tax-free income. So you keep doing that Roth, and then you add that 7702. You know, gosh, over half your income's going to be tax-free.
More than
and if you wanted to do double that, okay, $1,000 a month. Now you've got the ability to take out $2 million in tax-free income. Yeah, is, you heard it right here.
Do you have to lock it in for an X amount of time, like the 30 years you threw out? It's you put in and you cannot take it out until you've hit your 30-year point, I guess?
No, I was talking with an individual today that we were talking about. Now, look, he's in his 60s, and we were running some numbers where he's got about $255,000 to do something with, and we were giving him income options of turning on income in 6 years or 10 years. So it doesn't have to be locked into that 30, because with what you're doing with your 401k, because you're killing it there, and then you're doing Roth, if you do 7702, you might say, well, heck, I'm not waiting to 60 to retire. I might hit it at 55, you know. Call my office. We'll send you a book.
Sounds like you're doing great, James.
Yeah, call my office, 504-832-9200. We'll send you a book on it and help you with it.
I'm James Parker. We are Winning at Life with Gregory Ricks. Welcome. What's up? It's Winning It Live with Gregory Ricks, your wallet's favorite show. I'm your co-host, James Parker. Thanks for hanging out with us. We got one more segment to make you better with your money, but it doesn't stop here. In fact, you can do that self-improvement, bettering yourself, learning more about money 24 hours a day, 7 days a week with the Winning It Live app. You can listen to us live on the app. Also, our podcasts are on demand and just waiting on you. We already DVR'd them with notes, and it's there at your convenience. And it's a free download, the Winning It Live app.
I want to talk about 1993 changes in tax law. You good with that?
Yeah, 1993. I love 1993.
Yeah, I don't know what the number one song was or that year or something.
Probably something Nirvana or Pearl Jam
but,
related.
You know, what we're getting at here is what was the biggest deal about that? Let's see. There was the 1983 amendments were passed in the House on the evening of March 9th by a vote of 282-148. That's the one you were thinking about earlier when I brought this
up. Oh, we're talking about Social Security reform?
Yeah.
Okay.
And let's see, what was the votes here? That was, yeah, I was giving you the numbers. And then on the 1993 amendments, it was passed 243-102. I've got the numbers right there. But what we're talking about is when Social Security used to not be taxed. And in 83, they decided to, if you met a certain threshold, it would be 50% inclusive in taxes. And then they said, well, that went pretty good. Let's tax it some more. So in 1993, they increased, they added another bracket to it. That if you're above, say, for individuals, $25,000 to $32,000 is 50%. So above that $32,000, it's 85% inclusive. So, and then for couples, let's see, what is that number? I think it's $44,000.
That sounds right. For the 85% inclusive?
Yeah. I might not quite have that nailed right there. Let's see, Treasury rulings. Well, what? Here's what I'm getting at with this that's really interesting there is since 83, other than them adding another bracket, but let's just go with the 93, where it now Social Security is bracketed essentially at two brackets. That's 50% inclusive. Well, you've got the none, zero. Which is say, for example, in an individual below 25,000 is zero, 25,000 to 34 is 50%, above 34,000 is 85% inclusive. So we'll use them as an example. So I was reading an article the other day and it was something different on taxes. And then it just occurred to me. So when have they adjusted that for inflation? Because when we talk to people and go about income, you know, whether it's their pension or the household Social Security compared to distributions to make ends meet, you know, how do you get by on less than $25,000 these days? If all you're living on is Social Security, okay. But when you start adding income to that, because remember, it's the income that you make plus 50% of Social Security combined decides what the threshold of taxation is going to be, whether you're 50% include below 50, say for an individual below 25,000 or above 25,000 is 50% inclusive, above 34,000, you're 85% inclusive. But it's a combination of your income and half of Social Security. So it's hard to make money and opt out. If you're making, say, $1,500 a month from Social Security, that's $18,000 a year. And you make another $10,000 in income, you know, $20,000 in income, $20,000 plus half of the 18 on Social Security, you're there. you're over that amount. So you're 50% inclusive. So what's more complicated is it's easier for married couples to fall into that. There was a couple today that I did the workbook on. I think it was our guy from Poplarville, and the combined Social Security at FRA is going to be like 48,000. So with his pension, knowing he's going to be, if we take half of that, which let's just make it simple, it's call it 25,000. And he's got a pension of more than 25,000, but call it 25,000 as well. There's 50K. He's 85% inclusive based on that half.
And not exactly right rolling in the dough either.
No, no, he's not like killing it or anything income wise. Just, you know, have to live life, pay the bills and such. There's no lanyap in there. Once we get, we're talking about the numbers. He said, well, then I've got some room that I, we could like plan a nice trip every year. I said, yeah, because RMDs are going to catch up with you down the road. So you might as well enjoy some of it. Let's, so with that said, how have things changed since 1993? According to the Bureau of Labor Statistics Consumer Price Index, prices in 2018 are 74.39% higher than the prices in 93. The dollars experienced an average inflation rate of 2.87%. Let's put it in another perspective. $100.93 is the equivalent purchasing power of $174.39 this year, a difference of over $74.39 over the 25 years. How about that? Well, I did it also taking, what if we just took, okay, in 93, I was making 24,000. It's increased 74. I just increased that by 74%. So I'm having to earn $34,800 to have the same buying power. So if I'm making that, now I could have hung under that threshold of drawing Social Security, you know, my income with that. And let's say my Social Security was $1,000 a month. So I'm using half of that. So that'd be $6,000 a year. You see, I still hit that as an individual, hit that 50% inclusive. But now I'm just blowing right past it, going to 85% inclusive, because none of that threshold of those brackets have been adjusted. We've had the, you know, we just had the tax rates changed. Did they change Social Security tax rates?
No, they left those brackets the same.
Left those alone, but we got a discount on income tax brackets, but not on that one. Has not been touched. Not since 93, but actually since 1983. So my thing is, most everyone's being taxed on their Social Security, and that's their plan, and they're sticking to it.
I see why you're so easily excited about Roth 401k or, you know, money that's sort of off the tax grid when it comes to income streams. You know, the 7702 mentioned to James
what
before.
What we were talking about with James kicking in 30,000, what's that number? Yeah, 36,000 in untaxed, it's not going to be taxed income. And he's hitting his Roth with about that same amount every year. So think of it. He could be in retire having 60,000-70,000 a year in tax-free income, turn on Social Security. If he doesn't have any other income sources, his Social Security's not being taxed, because the numbers I just gave you does not go on the 1040. You should be planning to, how can I build some of my income tax-free?
Now, that'll do good until RMDs kick in, but isn't that a great problem to have?
Yeah, and you know he's going to kill it. He's 29, putting $18,000 a year in 401k. We hadn't even brought that into the conversation. So, yeah, the Social Security is going to get taxed some point, at least at RMDs, but wouldn't you like having $60,000 a year income like James is going to have if he has that other part of the conversation, what to do with just some of that extra $19,000 a year he's accumulating on the side.
Ah, but what do you know about this? What are you, a financial advisor or something?
Yeah, I'm a financial advisor, money manager. We're going to help you find your risk number so it correlates to what you're comfortable with on investing versus risk averse. Where are you on the path? Help you build multiple streams of income. Help you build tax-free income. This is conversations everybody listening should be having. Like, how can I do that? It doesn't matter whether you're 29 like James or 32 like Nicholas, or I'm not mentioning my age, but let's say you're 60. You can still build tax-free income into your retirement plan. Call my office, 504-832-9200, or go to gregoryricks.com.
Hey, thanks very much for hanging out with us. We appreciate your time. You can find more of our good stuff, winningatlife.com and the Winning at Life app. I'm James Parker. We are Winning at Life with Gregory Ricks.
Winning at Life with Gregory Ricks is a copyright of Down South Productions for the private use of our audience. Gregory Ricks is an investment advisor representative with Global Financial Private Capital. Any unauthorized use of this broadcast without expressed consent